All right, so my name is Jake. I'm here presenting for Shama today, who can't be here because of visa issues. But I've been working at Citrix and before that ZenSource for about 4 or 5 years now on the storage team. And I've recently returned to UBC, where a group of us have been thinking about virtualization and how it affects storage. So I'm going to start this talk off with a few juicy quotes from Gartner. We all know that Gartner loves to make predictions about the future of technology, and they've made quite a few bold claims about virtualization in one form or another over the years. So for example, they've claimed that 60% of all enterprises will deploy network computers or thin clients by 2001. 5 to 30 million Windows terminals will be sold per year by 2005. And more recently, they've claimed that 40% of desktops, or 49 million, will be virtualized by 2013. So I'm not going to make any claims about the accuracy of these predictions, but I think one thing is pretty clear. Virtualization is trying to take over the world. And you got to imagine, if Gartner keeps making claims like this, sooner or later they'll get one right. And who knows, maybe they got it right this time. So VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure, is kind of the newest incarnation of the thin client paradigm. And right now it's gaining quite a bit of traction in industry, so there's a lot of companies that are either rolling out prototype or production deployments of VDI. For example, at UBC, they're trying to roll out a 2,000 desktop deployment right now. Some of these companies are actually rolling out much larger deployments on the order of tens of thousands of desktops. And the reason for this is because IT admins love it. It lets them administer what they're working with centrally, and it reduces their hardware and maintenance costs. And the hope this time is that users will embrace VDI. Users have been hesitant to embrace thin client technology in the past, but the argument today is that by providing the familiar personal computing environment with performance similar to native desktops, users will be happy to work in this environment. And this performance argument is pretty critical. So if you're an IT guy and you're rolling out a test deployment of VDI with 500 desktops, and your users come into work today, the first day, and they start up Outlook to check their email, and it takes them 5 minutes to get access to their data, of course you're going to have a hard time getting them to embrace this technology. So we've been asking ourselves, how is VDI going to change storage? And the answer is it changes it quite significantly. Before virtualization, you'll basically have a bunch of physical hosts, each with their own disk. But when you throw virtualization into the picture, you'll see a couple of things here. You see there's this multiplying effect, where now each physical host is serving many VMs, and all of the data of these virtual disks is now typically stored in some central storage. And there's a pretty good reason for that. There's a few good reasons, in fact. Central storage is well-trusted. IT admins are comfortable with it. They're familiar. They know how to get around it. It's feature-rich, provides things like backup, duplication, migration. These things are hard to get from local disks on physical machines. But it's very expensive, especially when you consider that you need to provision this for your peak loads. So if you're rolling out a deployment of 10,000 desktops, you need storage that can handle all 10,000 desktops banging on it at the same time. But your IT admins will say that it's worth it, because it lets them sleep well at night. We all feel more comfortable with our data stored on enterprise-grade storage. So at UBC, we've been asking, is there anything we can do to improve this situation? Can we reduce the cost of deployments or get more out of existing SANs? And can we improve the user experience, basically improve performance here? So that's a bit of background. Here's an outline of the talk. I'm going to discuss quickly how VDI storage typically works, and I'll talk about some workload analysis we did at UBC at the deployment they're rolling out. And I'll talk about the design and implementation of Capo, which is a system that we developed to improve the VDI experience, discuss some evaluation, and I'll conclude. So there are a number of VDI vendors out there right now. Citrix, VMware, Microsoft all have solutions. But they all typically have the same strategy as far as storage architecture. The way things typically work is you'll have each virtual disk is basically a set of files stored on a central store somewhere. And you'll typically have a single gold image file that has your operating system installation, any applications and configuration files. And this is typically quite large, on the order of 10 or 15 gigs. And then each VM gets its own private writable clone of that disk. So each VM gets a clone file, which is basically a copy on write file linked to your gold image. And any writes made by the VM are directed to this private clone. So this architecture gives you a couple of things. It gives you sparse allocation, by which I mean you don't have to duplicate your gold image for each VM. You have one copy of that. And then this copy on write relationship makes it easy to share that across many VMs. And you have fast clone. So if you want to fork off 1,000 VMs, it's quite easy. You create 1,000 empty clones, link them to your gold image, and you're done. In reality, the picture is a little bit more complicated. So most VDI vendors have taken an idea from the collective at Stanford, in which they've broken up virtual disks into even more files. So you'll have this clone file based off the gold image as before, but now user data is separated or isolated in a separate file. And the reason for this is it makes it much easier to deploy upgrades. So if I have an installation of 10,000 virtual desktops and I want to push out upgrades to all those, with this architecture it's quite simple. I can apply an update to my gold image, delete all the existing clones for the VMs, and create new empty clones linked to the updated image. And by doing this, I've just basically updated 10,000 virtual disks just that easily. So this is actually quite common in VDI deployments. It's actually common practice to basically update your gold image every week or so. And it makes it easy for IT admins to make sure that everybody's got the latest patches, the latest security fixes, etc. So VDI, in addition to making it easy to administer desktops, makes it quite easy to do workload analysis. So Dutch was up here earlier, and he was discussing some file system studies he did where he had to send out 10,000 emails and get 1,000 responses and install software individually on each of these machines and collect results, make sure software uninstalled, etc. We wanted to do a workload analysis as well, but our job was much easier. We went to the local IT department at UBC, asked them if they would install some software on one of their deployments for us, and they very gracefully did so. And just like that, we had access to an entire deployment. So this particular deployment was a test deployment. It's 55 Windows Vista desktops in an administrative office at UBC. And we installed some Windows filter drivers. We installed these during the regularly scheduled weekly updates, so this was pretty inobtrusive to end users. And the drivers basically plugged in at the file and block level in the Windows storage stack and collected a bunch of statistics about accessing files and blocks. So we collected a lot of data and did some analysis. And this is a basic overview of what the workload looks like. So on the y-axis here, you see these are I/O requests issued from guests. On the x-axis is the time of day, and then each colored line represents a different day of the week. And you can see immediately that the workload is quite bursty. And this is kind of intuitive. It follows the typical pattern of the workday where you'll have quite a bit of activity when people get into work. There's kind of a lull around lunch. There's long periods of idleness during the wee hours of the night. But given this sort of bird's eye view of the workload, we wanted to understand more closely what individual requests look like. And this picture kind of breaks down the requests we observe in the workload according to reads and writes categorized by throughput and IOPS and also by the location in the namespace. And one of the interesting things about this picture to me is that very few of these requests are actually directed towards data directly owned by the user. So you can see on the far left, the light blue color represents requests that are made to user-manipulated data. And they don't make up a large portion of this workload. In fact, most of the workload represents accesses to Windows and program files, basically reads and writes being made by the operating system. And there's a fair bit of work being done manipulating file system metadata as well. We can see that we're about 65% writes here in terms of IOPS, but 65% reads in terms of throughput. So we're seeing a lot of small writes and fewer larger reads. But given the large number of writes that we're seeing, we wanted to take a closer look at them to understand them better. And there's quite a bit of an analysis in the paper. There's some more graphs that you can check out, but I'll give you the highlights here. We found that there's quite a high turn rate for data. So 8% of bytes getting written in this workload are pretty much immediately rewritten in 10 seconds. And 50% of all data is rewritten in 24 hours. So basically this tells us half of the data that gets written in our workload has a shelf life of 1 day. And we wanted to understand how this corresponds to individual VMs, so we looked at the clone files, the clones of the gold image, to see how much they grow as desktops are running. And we found that after about an hour of running the desktop, the clone file has grown to about 1 gig in size. But by the end of the trace, which was a week long, these clone files hadn't grown a whole lot more than that, so they're still around 1 gig. And this kind of points to the fact that a lot of data that gets written is rewritten quite frequently. Moreover, we found that a lot of this divergence from the gold image was actually from files like the page file and other Windows files, rather than from data that's directly generated by users. So there's more details in the paper, but I'll just give you a summary of some of the things we found in this workload study. We found that the workload was quite bursty. There's quite a bit of sharing among VMs. Even though you have this sort of 1 gig divergence, a great proportion of the gold image is actually shared by all VMs. There's a high churn rate, so a lot of data is getting rewritten quite frequently, and the namespace is not accessed uniformly. And so, in other words, some files are accessed much more frequently than others. So given this understanding of this workload, we wanted to ask, how can we improve the VDI experience? How can we improve storage scalability? And the observation that we make is that we have a bunch of physical hosts talking to a central store, but they have a bunch of disks sitting there that are pretty much idle. And so we thought we would do the very obvious thing of using these disks to offload work from the SAN onto the local machines. So we developed a local persistent cache, and the goal of this cache, as I said, is to offload work from your central store onto local machines. So we have a library in DOM0 which interposes on the disk images, and any data retrieved from the central store is cached on your local file system. We have a system of bitmaps which track the presence of locally cached files, and another system of bitmaps which track what parts of the local files are dirty and need to be synced back to the central store. And with this, we can support write through and write back with an adjustable write back window. And we found that this cache does a pretty good job of eliminating a lot of redundant reads on individual hosts. But we found, looking at our workload, that there's actually quite a bit of data shared across multiple hosts. And we wanted to extend this local cache so that all hosts would benefit from each individual local cache. So we developed this multi-host preloader. And the goal, like I said, of this is to sort of share local caches among all hosts. And the way we did this was by developing a NFS proxy, which sits between the hosts and the central store. And it snoops on requests for the gold image file, basically. Any reads from the gold image file, the results of those reads are multicasted to all hosts. In this way, basically, anytime one VM reads the gold image, that data is sort of multicasted to all caches on all hosts. Because we're using multicast and UDP here, we found that we needed some basic congestion control, or either that or an isolated network. We did implement some congestion control, which was necessary to prevent these multicast streams from oversaturating the network and killing our TCP streams. So now we have local caches that are shared across all hosts, and these are doing a great job at eliminating a lot of the redundant reads. But looking at our workload, we see that there's quite a lot of writing going on, and there's this high churn rate, and we wanted to further improve scalability with respect to these writes. So the idea of this differential durability is to reduce write-back burden, and basically the notion is that you can categorize data according to its value. So there's a lot of different types of data on the system. You have user-created data, you have temporary files, you have your page file. Some data is more important than others. And things like the page file and temporary data, actually, is not that valuable. There's no reason to store it on your expensive SAN, keep it backed up, and replicated. It's fine if that data fate shares with the VM. That is, if the VM crashes, you don't really need to be able to recover your page file. So we have a mechanism that allows you to partition your gold image disk. You can isolate user data, put it on a separate image, basically, which is stored on a disk with a very aggressive write-through policy, so you can be sure any writes to this data will be stored on your central store as well as your local cache. And then expendable data like the page file is put on a disk that's never written to the central store. So these IOPS are completely eliminated. So this is a sort of bird's eye view of our architecture. You can see that each host has a local persistent cache, and there's this durability map, which sort of maps file system objects from within the guest onto different caching policies in the host. And then all hosts communicate to the shared storage via this proxy, which is responsible for multicasting shared data to all hosts. So this system, the local cache, was prototyped by Sharma during an internship at Citrix. It's about 7,000 lines of C code. We ended up writing the prefetcher a couple of different times. The first few times didn't perform very well, but the current RPC proxy implementation we have seems to be working pretty well. And this idea of using local disks to cache data has actually been incorporated into the products at Citrix. It's known as IntelliCache in the product, but you guys can download it and play around with it if you're interested. So I'm going to spend a few minutes here talking about some evaluation, and then I'll conclude. We performed a number of micro benchmarks to sort of evaluate individual components, but I'm just going to talk about one here, which is intended to isolate the benefits of multicasting. So this experiment, we had three physical hosts, and each host had a single VM. And we booted one VM, waited a few seconds, and booted the next two VMs. So on the y-axis here, you can see read IOPS seen by the server. On the x-axis is time. And then the different colors here represent different caching configurations. So the red line here is without any caching. And you can see basically your read IOPS scale with the number of VMs that are booting, which is to be expected. The blue line represents just write-through caching on local hosts. And you can see there is some reduction in IOPS here. Simply by eliminating redundant reads on individual hosts, you are able to decrease the number of IOPS on the server. But when you introduce the multicast prefetcher, this benefit is improved even more significantly. Because essentially, the first VM to boot is prefetching the cache, pre-warming up the cache for the other two VMs. So as I mentioned, there's more micro benchmarks in the paper, but I'm going to switch tracks here really quickly and talk about the trace replay. So we took the workload that we had recorded earlier from the UBC deployment, and we ran this through our caching system. So the original environment, the workload, was collected from a VMware installation backed off of a SAN. In our lab, we have Zen server installations with a Linux filer. So the environment is not entirely the same. We did our best to match the workload, but it wasn't exactly the same. And the way that we implemented the replayer is with a simple Perl application, which basically reads the trace request log and tries to issue a request pattern that matches that. And we did our best to match this workload. So these are a couple of selected peaks of the workload played with our cache. And these two time slices are from some of the most active peaks that we recorded. So I think these are Monday and Tuesday morning between 8 and 10. So basically the highest activity level that we recorded during the workload. And hopefully you guys can see the color here, but in both of these graphs, the black line represents the original workload as we replayed it. So there's no caching going on here. And the red line represents our local host cache with the write-through policy. And you can see already that with the write-through caching, we're able to eliminate a significant number of IOPS, as seen by the central server. But there are periods, particularly around like the 20-minute time slice on the second graph, where write-through caching is not very effective in eliminating IOPS. And this is presumably because these are very write-intensive parts of the workload. But you can see with the introduction of write-back caching and differential caching, we're further able to eliminate these IOPS. So the write-back caching in this configuration had a 10-minute write-back window. And the differential caching, you can refer to the paper for the exact categorization of data. But essentially, we made sure that all user data was persisted on the central store quite aggressively, and things like the temp files were not written to the central store. In both of these configurations, you can see we're able to reduce IOPS quite significantly. So in conclusion, we think VDI is kind of a new popular technology. It's gaining some traction, and it's going to pose some new challenges for storage vendors. And we think central storage is probably a reasonable solution here for a number of reasons, but we think there are advantages. There's wins to be had with local caching and this idea of differential durability. All right, that's it.
While Steve comes on up here, I'll ask a quick question. Michael Koenig, NetApp again. Did you do you know whether you were updating the timestamp on files for each write? Because that would contribute a whole bunch of extra writes. That essentially doubles the number of writes per IOP. You can turn that off.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in case you guys didn't hear that, Dutch said that he thinks that that feature was turned on, so timestamps were being updated with writes.
Well, that was one of my questions. Steve Byan from the NetApp.
That's all right.
Good one. I also wondered if you knew if there was any virus scan activity.
Yes, there was. All and right. I think we also observed some defrag activity as well. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of fine-tuning to be done with these VDI deployments.
The other thing I wondered if you mentioned a lot of churn in some small spaces. I wondered if you were able to isolate that, if the file system journal had anything to do with that.
I don't think we broke it down in terms of the journal. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of metadata that was obviously being rewritten quite frequently, but I'm not sure if we were able to isolate.
You can't see what the journal
mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, thanks very much.
Yeah.
So Keith Smith, also from NetApp, so I'd encourage people from other companies and universities to please ask questions. So the write-back measurements you were doing, so in the one of the graphs was covered a 15-minute time period, and you had a 10-minute write-back
yep.
delay. So I was wondering, is that sampled from a larger stream, so you're seeing some write-back traffic from earlier, or are you basically
yep.
just pushing?
Okay. So the way we did those measurements is we kind of replayed the trace up into that point. Sort of simulating the write-back window so that we would have filled up our amount of data that needs to be synced back.
And this may be in the paper, but do you have a rough idea with the write-back, how much you're saving just because you're pushing the traffic to some time when it's less busy, and how much you're saving by writes that die in the cache, essentially?
I think, actually, we did choose this sort of 10-minute write-back window based on an analysis of the data, so that seems to be a kind of sweet spot where a lot of writes will get coalesced in the cache. So there's a fair savings just from that, yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. I'm Dave Key from VMware. Just my question was on the overhead of designing such a cache itself, mm-hmm. especially in terms of memory in a virtual environment. If the cache itself takes some memory, then what would be the hit on, say, virtual machines? Would you then see a degradation in performance?
So our cache is mostly persistent. So it's living on the disk. We're not actually consuming a whole lot of memory space, as far as I'm aware.
Okay, and the overhead evaluation, impact on the workload itself in terms of the cache overheads?
Yeah.
Say CPU or?
We certainly do increase the latency a little bit by doing the lookup in the local cache.
Okay.
But I don't have specific numbers for you, but obviously you'll have some wins here when your SAN is oversaturated. If you can fetch data from your local cache, you'll have wins there.
Okay.